Welcome to BEN,
Blockchain Education Network,
the largest and longest running network of students, alumni, and professors excited about blockchain across the world. A podcast for students by students, sharing their vision that anyone, regardless of wherever they are in the world, will be able to use blockchain as a vehicle to create wealth for themselves and their communities. This is BEN,
the Blockchain Education Network.
I'm Jeremy Guzman. I'm the director of tech here with the Blockchain Education Network. We have Cameron Shorg. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, sure. Yep, we got it.
Nice. So yeah, we have Cameron Shorg from Notional Finances here to give us his take on his adventure into DeFi and his current position with Notional Finance, as well as the various DAOs that he's contributing to or has created throughout his time here in the space. So without further ado, I'm going to give Cameron the mic. Please introduce yourself.
Yeah, thanks, Jeremy. Awesome to be on here. And super excited always to do anything with BEN. I've been pretty involved with BEN in the past. And so, great to get the chance to jump back in with you guys, an awesome organization. So, I'm not sure if you just wanted to start anywhere. I can start back in the very beginning of how I fell down the crypto rabbit hole and all that kind of thing, or wherever you want me to take it. I'm happy to do it.
Yeah. Let's have a little bit of an origin story. You know, let's start from the beginning and then let's get gradually progressive into where you're at today. So
Sounds great. Yeah. So I originally got into crypto back in 2013. At the time, I was in high school. And, had heard about Bitcoin a few times kind of on, I don't know if it was on the news, but like just, a few articles here and there or something like that. And never really like double clicked into any of them. And I had a kid in my biology class that kept bugging me about it. And he's like, you got to check out this Bitcoin thing, man. I'm like making all this money. It's great. It's like the future of the world, yada, yada, all this stuff. And I kind of always rolled my eyes. And then one day he came up and he's like, hey, man, I heard you talking to our teacher about finance and like and investing in businesses and stuff like that. And you seem like a pretty smart guy. Like, I'm looking to start a business, helping people sell Bitcoin. It's really hard to do so right now. You want to help me out? And I remember actually like going out into the hallway, like raising my hand, asking if I go to the bathroom, going to the hallway, pulling up Bitcoin on my phone at the time, and like the first two articles are like Bitcoin for fake IDs and drugs and Silk Road and only for criminals kind of thing. And then the third article, I double clicked in on, and to be honest, like, totally blew my mind. I think it was written, I can't remember actually like what the piece was, but it was a more of a philosophical piece, like why Bitcoin is important. And it like just really opened things up for me. And I was always super interested in like, and jealous of folks that got to be part of building and creating the internet. Was just like too young to be a part of that wave. But I always was like envious of like being in that position. After reading that like article in the hallway on Bitcoin, I was like, holy shit, like this is that moment for me. I have the opportunity to like get involved in this thing. It's clearly at the ground floor, and like I could be a part of like building the next, the next like financial ecosystem for the world. And like that originally, like the opportunity was what drew me to crypto mostly. We went from there and actually ended up launching an exchange. We kind of parted ways pretty much right after. I ran a Bitcoin buy only exchange for about 2.5 years through the end of high school and into college, called Bit Brothers LLC. When I say an exchange, I mean, this was like pretty rudimentary. I mean, I had never built a website in my life. Basically, it was a website that said, hey, email me and I'll help you get Bitcoin. Went through that whole process did a little bit of advertising, and it just blew up. I mean, at the time it was impossible to buy Bitcoin really anywhere except for, BitInstant, or you could do the Mt. Gox route and go through a bunch of different currencies and kind of the mess therein. But was able to find a way to get people Bitcoin on a much quicker basis. At the time, with a lot less oversight maybe than like you'd need to go through with other folks. And so that was kind of the edge, and I ran that for 2.5 years, and that kind of then again leads into this interesting story that I had. Freshman in college at the time at the University of South Carolina, get a call from my dad, and he goes, hey Cameron, not so great news. Got a big packet today from the Department of Treasury letting us know they're doing a Bank Secrecy Act compliance audit into the Bitcoin exchange that you're running. Had no clue what the hell that meant or what it was or whatever. Ended up turning into like a 4.5 year long process. Had to hire a lawyer and go through, like, basically spend all the money I made in Bitcoin on legal fees and teach the IRS about Bitcoin and how to audit me, and this, like, you know, whole wild kind of story really about, like, the IRS auditing me for making sure I wasn't interacting with people on, like, sanction lists, or making sure I wasn't collecting driver's licenses and, like, doing all that kind of stuff that, like, exchanges have to do now, like basic KYC stuff. At the time, I'm like 17, 18 years old. I don't even know what KYC means. I don't know what AML is or Bank Secrecy Act or anything like that. But, but that's kind of, I guess, like where things really started for me. And kind of through that and, during some of this audit in the same time or whatever, I got really passionate about just education and, like, evangelizing Bitcoin and crypto to the rest of the world. And that's actually where I got involved with, at the time, it was called the College Cryptocurrency Network. But that's now obviously Ben, Blockchain Education Network. Got involved with Jeremy Gardner and Dean Masley and Michael Gordon, some of the, guys back then, and helping build out the Blockchain Education Network, and really found a home there. And I credit the Blockchain Education Network tremendously with, like, helping me advance my ecosystem and friend group and all that kind of stuff in crypto. So was really involved in Ben for a few years while I was going to school, and worked at Shapeshift for about 2.5 years while I was going to school as well. Was one of the first employees there, and got to kind of watch that company grow from just a few employees to, like, over 100 at the height of the crypto, craze back in 2017, early 2018. Did the crypto blockchain-y enterprise-y thing at Dish Network for about a little over a year, and have been at Notional Finance now for about a year and a half, coming up here soon. That's the full story.
That's incredible. So let's build on this conversation a little bit. Let's discuss this business, this exchange, this one-way exchange that you created, right? I mean, at 17, 18 years old, that's an impressive feat in itself. Two, give us your thoughts on where your head was at the time of Bitcoin. I know you gave us a brief high-level explanation, but, like, let's dive into that a little bit and give us a little taste of how that thought process has evolved since then. I mean, of course, Bitcoin as an idea, as well as an acknowledged asset, has transformed significantly from its inception, right? So let's go from there.
Awesome. Like I said, like, the very first initial, like, inclination of why I wanted to get involved in crypto, like, had nothing to do with, like, this, libertarian philosophy behind Bitcoin and, like, fuck the government and, like, any of that kind of stuff. It was very much of, like, again, like, holy shit, I always wanted to be a part of creating the internet, was too young to do it. Like, this is now creating something that's as transformational as the internet. I got to be a part of it. And, like, it was that opportunity that really drew me. From that, though, like, it's pretty hard back then, especially, like, when you're, first of all, you could read every news article about Bitcoin at the time, like, in a day. Like, now, I mean, like, good luck. There's, 10,000 articles posted a day about crypto. Like, you're not going to be able to keep up. At the time back then, you could. And, like, most of the content was written around this, like, libertarian philosophy about, like, self-sovereign money, about decentralized money, about taking power, away from governments and from nation states, and creating a currency that was for the people, by the people, owned by the people. And I really, really bought into that idea and learned a lot about how the Federal Reserve works, how the international money system works, just got, like, fascinated by, like, the history of money and libertarian philosophy in general. So, read Ayn Rand going into college freshman year and like, just couldn't get enough of like, wow, like, Bitcoin is the ticket here for like, a lot of, to, like, putting a lot of these principles in practice. And that really was the big motivator, I guess, behind a lot of, like, I would call, like, my evangelism work, right? Like, throughout college and whatnot, was, like, really believing, and I still believe, that like, Bitcoin is one of, if not the most exciting, like, opportunity that exists in crypto. is like rewriting money at its core. It's like level zero, the base layer, as far as you can go, that everything else gets, you know, layered on top of. And yeah, just a really awesome opportunity to be involved in something like that. So.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's really awesome. And I think what I follow a similar story in the sense that same thing, like my buddy who just came up to me and was like, hey, dude, you got to start buying this. This Bitcoin thing. And I'm like, what the heck are you talking about, bro? Like, well, what's a Bitcoin? Mind you, this was like maybe 5-6 years ago, right? 7 years ago.
Yeah.
And of course, interesting enough, he was buying it for illicit reasons. He wasn't doing the right thing. I'll put it that way.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
He was just saying, hey, dude, you got to check this out. I mean, you can make a good chunk of change off of it. And here we are, you know. I kind of went on the other side of the coin, all pun intended. And just dove into that rabbit hole, but let's dive into it on a more expansive standpoint, in the sense of DAOs, right? You mentioned briefly that you're involved in a couple of DAOs. What are they? What are you contributing to them? What do you think of DAOs in its current state?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, for one, like I think. So the blockchain education, like this, you know, motivation behind a DAO of like having a group of people potentially from all across the world pooling resources together around a common interest, and trying to actualize their mission out into the world via collaboration, a flat, you know, hierarchy, like all of these like principles that I think are at the core of like what we consider DAOs are today. Was like very much a part of the ethos that the Blockchain Education Network was back in 2014, 2015, 2016 as well, right? And so like where I'm getting with that is I actually like there's probably a big argument to be said that like Blockchain Education Network has kind of always been a DAO and like and it very much you know was I would say like the first one then if that's the case that I got super involved in. We chatted about that for a second, but yeah, I mean I first like learned about DAOs through the DAO, you know, which was this investment vehicle, this like decentralized venture firm or venture fund, I should say. I invested in it. It got burned just like everyone else did when it you know imploded and whatnot. And I you know after that I actually was a little like late to some of the you know the evolution of DAOs and like the explosion over the last. 12 months really with like just the proliferation of DAOs launching left and right. And what I mean by that is, you know, at the time when this was happening, I was at Dish Network on the complete opposite spectrum of like living, like working in a DAO. I was working at a Fortune 250 company, still on crypto and blockchain and stuff, but definitely not in the light of what DAOs are. Yeah, I mean, got involved with Notional Finance. Notional Finance, you know, we've got a long way to go before we, you know, really it's all these DAOs I would say are on a spectrum and every single one of these DAOs probably, you know, starts in a different place and they have a different goal of where they're trying to get to. Notional is no different. And, but, you know, we are progressively decentralizing as a company and as a DAO and, you know, super, super excited to be like at the ground floor of doing that and implementing a lot of these things and like thinking through deeply, like how they work and why it's important and, all those things. So, Notional Finance is the main, you know, DAO ecosystem that I'm, plugged in on. It's my main full-time, you know, gig. You know, from there are other DAOs that I think are super interesting that I do contribute to. Most recently, actually got involved in a group called MoonDAO, which I'll give a little shout out here. But the core concept is like, hey, let's like create a ecosystem for you know making humanity multiplanetary. Let's put us on the moon. Let's put us in space. Let's like show people what you know what it feels like to be in space and look down on Earth and all those kinds of things. And so it's a DAO around kind of those missions. And you know they raised like $10 million already around this mission and like are looking to launch people into space this year on Blue Origin and that kind of thing. And like. Just the ability to do those types of things like is not possible with traditional companies and traditional you know nonprofits and stuff like that even really in the same way that it is in the DAO structure. And so that's like a fascinating development and in like a really bullish you know, like thing to pay attention to and be involved around. So yeah, MoonDAO is another one that I'm pretty plugged in on. You know, there are a few others that I'm happy to double click on or whatever, but yeah, I don't know if anything else jumps out there.
No, that's sick. And I would like to also extend the invitation to anyone in the audience. If you have any questions for Cameron, please feel free to request to speak, and I'll be more than happy to bring you up on the stage. But yeah, let's stick to the idea of DAOs at the moment. You know, I'm curious to hear, what are your thoughts on, you know, current governance models? You mentioned that Notional is in the process of transitioning into its own DAO. So yeah, what are your thoughts on current governance models? How can they improve within their current states? I do understand and know that some DAOs operate significantly more differently than others. And then we could also evolve the conversation into meta governance, right? That's more of a trendy topic recently. Mm-hmm. But yeah, let's start foundationally speaking. Current governance models, how can they improve?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. You know, I think the right governance model is going to look different for every DAO. And I think that's part of the problem, is that we kind of have this, or like conceptually this like North Star that we think every DAO should be. And that's like, you know, one person, one vote. Everyone should vote on everything. The, you know, hierarchy should be completely flat with like no leadership, with, you know, like, I think that's kind of the general like North Star that people like to point to as far as what we're building here with all these different DAOs. And I think that's the wrong way of looking at it. You know, every DAO is going to have, let me back up here a little bit. So Notional, for example, like if we from day one were completely flat, had no leadership, and were absolutely open with everything, Notional wouldn't exist. And I think that's the case for most of these DeFi protocols specifically, and a lot of other projects as well. Now, things that like start with community as the core product, you know, something like MoonDAO, for example, where it's like this core product is the community centered around this mission. It's a little bit easier to, you know, to launch like without a lot of infrastructure in place beforehand. And I think that's where we kind of get hung up, is like, you know, it's interesting to me, again, like, you know, we want to put governance and like force governance into situations maybe when they're not ready yet. I think an awesome example of this is in the Bankless DAO, they just recently overcame this challenge. But for a while, they passed a new a quorum requirement for pushing proposals through, that, you know, like, let's say they've got to have 30% of all Bankless DAO voters vote on anything in order for it to go through. They got it passed. And then every single proposal after that has not even come close to reaching that 30% quorum. And it's just created this, you know, like this massive challenge, and it's like slowed things down significantly. And so I think we've got just a long, long way to go before we figure out the right, you know, model for the different DAOs. And I'm a big advocate of like not trying to force, you know, the like a generic model on every DAO. I think every DAO is going to have a different path and a different model that makes sense for them. And I'd like to see a lot more, you know, of that. Yeah. And that's kind of, I guess, from like a high level where I'd go. I mean, I'm happy to double click on like the voting mechanism stuff specifically, if like that's interesting, but, I think that pretty much captures it.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. And I also think it's worth highlighting how DAOs as coordination mechanisms, you know, it definitely enabled, or at least brought to the forefront, choice architecture, right? I mean, this is something that you would think is innate, right? Everybody should be able to have this type of architecture within their community. But interesting enough, we've never seen it on full display, or at least and on such a large stage, right? And I think that's where the interesting aspect of, or the interesting attribute that DAOs carry, right? That alongside the various roles that we're seeing within this new niche of like community building, right? I mean, there was an article I read not too long ago. There's three main roles, right, in community building. There's settlers, explorers, and town planners, so basically operators, strategists, and developers, right? And now we're starting to see that evolve into actual career paths for some people, right? Like you mentioned earlier, full-time crypto. Some people are full-time DAO now. Yeah. So it's really fascinating to see how fast this space is evolving. And now we're even seeing DAO-to-DAO mergers or DAO-to-DAO liquidity, right? I mean, these are a couple years ago, these are just foreign concepts. Like, what the heck does that even mean, right? So yeah, it's pretty interesting stuff.
I was going to say, like, one really simple, stupid example that just, like, again, kind of shows the different way that DAO contributors are engaging that I think is kind of interesting is, you know, we recently have been working on, you know, some bounties and grants, and we really wanted to have a specific individual engage with us and work on a bounty with Notional, and they weren't able to because they had like a traditional finance job, and that like really sucked. Like, they basically couldn't get approval from their regular job, their like Web2 finance job, to come work in a DAO. And like, that is amazing that DAOs like don't really give a shit if you are contributing to a lot of different DAOs. And in fact, it's normally a, as long as you're not spreading yourself too thin, which is a whole nother, you know, rabbit hole to double click in. But, as long as you're not spreading yourself too thin, it's actually like a benefit if you're contributing to several different DAOs, because you're bringing all that knowledge from those people and opportunities to collaborate and like cross pollinate and whatnot. I just think that's just just a little like example or side note of folks now getting involved, like we say, our normie friends coming over that like looks a lot different than the traditional world, is like side hustles or like engagements with several DAOs is like very much a good thing. Where in the traditional world, it's not. It's like you have your one job, that's it. If you want to do anything outside of that, you better keep it hush hush.
And I think what the conversation that gets sprung up now is the transparency aspect of it, right? I mean, before, it was, like you said, it's very taboo, very hush-hush to even know the colleague sitting next to you at a traditional job, how much they're making, right? Now it's out in the open. You go on a forum and you say, I think Jeremy or Cameron, they've been active contributors to the community. They deserve to get X amount of whatever in compensation. And the community will decide on it. It's not just this hierarchical structure. It's now this flat architecture that everybody gets to determine what's best for not only this individual but for the community at large. So I thought that fascinated me when I first got into the space, and I'm sure it did for you too. With that said, kind of want to now transition. Before we do that, I want to open the floor to those in the audience. If you have any questions or if you'd like to voice your opinion on whatever topic that we have or we're speaking about, please feel free to request. We'll bring you up to the stage. Let's pivot the conversation a little bit to your experience working at Shapeshift. I'm going to pose a question here. How was that experience in comparison to the more corporate experience that you had with Dish Network?
Yeah, that's a fun topic. So for one, it's important to note that, I mean, Shapeshift now is very much a DAO, and they've done really a tremendous job over the last year, going from like a regular traditional company into DAO-fying themselves. And they've been very outspoken about that process and whatnot, and, should get a big high five for their work there. But like, when I was at Shapeshift, it was very much a traditional company. That being said, it was a traditional company, but like still a crypto startup, and very, very different than Dish Network. The biggest thing is like, first of all, just the overall, like, everyone that worked at Shapeshift was working at Shapeshift because like, we believe in this mission that, Bitcoin, cryptocurrencies, so on, like had the capability and power to like really change the world at a very fundamental level. And that is something that working at Dish Network was like, good luck. People have been there for 35 years. They don't really give a shit about Dish. They just work there because they get a paycheck, so on and so forth. They're trying to get a promotion. Like, that was not the case at Shapeshift. It was very much Eric, like led Shapeshift from very like principled values, and Shapeshift like looked for folks that like held those same values. And so it was really incredible to get, you know, at like a super young age to get to like be exposed to a leader like that in like a company that was building something because they not were trying to go make money, but because they like believed like deep down at the company's core that like this should be in existence. And so like, because of that, it was like just a hell of a lot of fun. Yeah, I mean, I don't know that there's like that much more to say about it. Like we, you know, we did have, like a little bit of structure, obviously, as we grew, like we got to see the, you know, like there was no structure and then we got to like 20, 30, 40 people and it was like, holy shit, we need structure. We need an HR department. We need these things and stuff like that. So like, you know, we went through those growing pains back then to figure all those things out, just like any company that's like rapidly scaling does, you know. But yeah, I mean, it was cool back then too to be a part of that company because Shapeshift was like what I would call like the Dex before Dexes were even a word or a name, and you know we had a ton of brand recognition at the time, like I would say a lot more than like Shapeshift has now, and so like we're really, you know, when we go to conferences and I'd say I work at Shapeshift, people are like, holy shit, that's awesome, like tell me more, I want to get involved, all that kind of thing, and so again, like really couldn't like speak more highly of you know like that opportunity. Working at Shapeshift, quite funny actually. You know, going back a little bit, talking about this like Bank Secrecy Act compliance audit that that we went through, that I went through early in college. I specifically remember telling Eric about that, you know, occurrence, and him being like, "Damn, that's fucking sweet. Like, I'm so glad you work here," kind of thing. I remember it was like my first week and he's like, "Hell yeah, you're the right person to work here. That's awesome." And it was like a congratulations, how much you must have learned. That's so cool compared to, you know, I would like never in a million years bring that conversation up during my interview at Dish Network. So again, like that kind of just like shows the stark comparison of like how Eric / Shapeshift, like, you know, just views like, you know, innovation and falling and like pushing boundaries and like being on the edge and the cutting, you know, cutting edge of things, and like how Dish Network views, you know, like go to market and innovation and stuff like that. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's fascinating, right? I mean, that's incredible. That's incredible how you wouldn't even think twice of bringing that up in Dish, but how open and welcoming Shapeshift and Eric was to the idea of like, oh wow, you just got subpoenaed by this legislative entity. I mean, this,
yeah, well, it was, you know, it was like we're family. Like Eric went through the whole thing with Satoshi Dice. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that story, but like he got you know, basically in a bunch of trouble with the SEC and settled and whatever over Satoshi Dice and stuff too. So he was like on the same exact page as me, you know. And like again, that was kind of going back to this idea that like everyone at Shapeshift was there because we were like building something that we wanted to see in the world, not because it was a job. And you know, and like in that sense, Shapeshift was very similar to like what you see in DAOs today. It's like no one's working in a DAO today just to like, you know, just because it's a job. You know, there's definitely money grabs and stuff like that out there, but like the real contributors in DAOs, like they're there because they believe in this, they're having fun, they're there with friends, you know, which is like very much in the same, you know, way that like that like Shapeshift's culture was as well. And like not even comparable to the culture at Dish.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. So then with that said, let's go ahead and transition to your current role. I mean, you mentioned Notional. But for those who are just joining or those who aren't familiar with Notional, just give us a brief introduction to what exactly Notional Finance is and what exactly you do over at Notional Finance.
Yeah, happy to. So Notional Finance is a fixed rate lending and borrowing protocol. Right now, we're only on ETH mainnet. You know, the big thing to point out here is that we are fixed rate, meaning you can take out a loan or lend at fixed rates and fixed maturities. Right now, those maturities are 3 months, 6 months, and 1 year. We function very similar to how like Aave or Compound functions in the sense that everything is like over collateralized, and you don't have like counterparty risk in that sense. Except again, the big difference is that we focus explicitly on fixed rates. We, you know, like the big thesis, I guess, behind like why we believe fixed rates need to exist in crypto If you just look at traditional finance, for example, the fixed rate markets are really like what underpins our economy, or the global economy. And that's home loans, auto loans, student loans, corporate bonds, U.S. treasuries. Most of these things are all based around fixed rate, products. And that didn't exist in crypto before Notional came about. Teddy and Jeff, our two founders, they kind of saw that opportunity, realized that, in order for crypto to really mature and for, companies to actually start using, some of these lending and borrowing protocols as treasury operations, and in order to get traditional finance folks into crypto and allow things like student loans in DeFi and home loans in DeFi and those kinds of things, we had to have fixed rate products. And so that's why we created Notional. And that's a little shtick about Notional. I joined as the first employee back in January of last year. We launched our token and liquidity mining program and governance process and all that kind of stuff and the Notional DAO back in November. Things have been going super well for us overall, I would say. A lot of room to go yet, but we're definitely the clear leaders in this fixed rate space. We have about $500 million in TVL right now. We facilitated somewhere in the ballpark of $350 million in lending and borrowing activity over the last 3 or 4 months now. Really excited about a bunch of future product things that are coming up. Happy to jump into any of those, but that's the story.
Yeah, dive into those. Feel free.
Cool. So yeah, a few fun updates, I guess, that we're excited about. One, this week specifically, Urine Finance deposited or lent $50 million to the Notional protocol. Again, a massive vote of confidence in the protocol itself and also one of the best protocols to partner with in this space. I think what's most notable about that is that it shows that fixed rate products and specifically those on Notional are really needed in the market. It's not a $1 million lend that Urine did. It's $50 million, which, constitutes a pretty substantial amount of their DAI and USDC pools. They did so because of the exact thesis of why we believe fixed rates are important. It's it's stability. It's higher rates than what they're earning on Compound and Aave, although that's honestly not even the biggest piece of it. Really, I think it's more around the stability that and predictability that fixed rates offer. That's one, I guess, kind of cool, exciting announcement that we just had to come out this week. And working on a bunch of other integrations and whatnot as well. We've got a staking module coming out pretty soon that allow people to stake their note tokens to earn some of the protocol revenue fees. Another one with another DAO out there, we're working on a product called Fixed with Index Co-op. Essentially, it is a bond index where the fixed product basically gives the holder of the fixed token passive exposure to the fixed rates on Notional. This is a product that I could see someone like a Grayscale putting into a fund and allowing people to invest in. It's it is very familiar to the traditional finance world, meaning a bond index. Really excited to work on that product with them. I think there's some announcements coming out early next week, if not, over the weekend here on us moving through that governance process. We've been working on it with them for a few months now and stuff. And those are just a few things.
Awesome. Awesome stuff all around. With that said, before I make my comment, I want to again extend the invitation. I see two of my colleagues here, Drayson and Eric, are in the audience. If you guys want to hop on stage and join the conversation, just feel free to send a request. But that said, I did see the Urine announcement. I believe that was earlier last week, if I'm not mistaken. But either way, that's impressive. Urine's fantastic, and I'm excited to see how Notional will evolve, especially on the DAO front. I'm a DAO nerd, so that's everything that I breathe, eat, and live basically. But that's sick. Let me see here. I have some notes that I have.
I'll just jump in real quick there on like the DAO treasury management side of things. You know, it's not something that we've done a ton of. I mean, a lot of the activity on Notional today has been from, you know, family offices and institutions and investors and high net worth individuals and that kind of thing. And like obviously just like, you know, believers in Notional, but we really are pushing to do a lot more DAO treasury management stuff. I think the Yearn thing is not specifically like a treasury management piece. It's not coming from, you know, the Yearn treasury. It's coming from their like active pools. That's, you know, their like core product as far as like yield aggregation. That being said, you know, we actually just posted a proposal for Angle Protocol that kind of operates this like Euro stablecoin to direct a bunch of their funds from their treasury into fixed rates on Notional. And Pool Together also has an active proposal out there to deploy capital onto Notional. And it really just like highlights again, like the predictability, the stability, as well as like the rates that these like opportunity is there for these DAOs to deploy some capital there and like make their, you know, treasuries productive and be able to earn yield on them in a very predictable fashion, which is, you know, is massive. I think eventually, you know, the first step is for a lot of these DAOs to like lend fixed on Notional. And eventually we'd love to see some DAOs actually borrowing against, you know, their treasury to finance operations. You know, you look at someone like Uniswap that's got literally billions of dollars in their treasury. You know, let's say Uniswap wants to run like a 25, you know, or let's say a $10 million a year grants program. They could maybe like, you know, deposit $20 million of ETH on Notional and borrow against it at a pretty low rate, at a fixed low rate, and be able to like finance their, you know, their operations with it kind of thing. And like, I think that's a really cool, use case that like we have yet to see much of, but definitely will come and is a use case like we're excited to build for.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to see that as well. Just on the sidelines, I think what you guys are doing is amazing. Let's see here. I mean, with that said, I think it's a good time to now transition. We have about 15 minutes left in the space. We could definitely open the floor to some Q&As for anybody that wants to come up here and ask any questions. We've been kind of rambling a long time. Let's see what the audience has to say.
Yeah, sounds great.
Awesome. So anybody would like to send a request, feel free. I'll bring you on stage.
I mean, this is always where like Twitter Spaces needs like a little, you know, active music thing. It's always I run our community calls at Notional, and this is, you know, I'm like, any questions? And there's a nice like 30-second delay always, you know.
always, yeah. And yeah. One thing that I've seen people do, at least on Discord, is exactly that. They'll play like music in the background, and then you know, side conversations start springing up, which is cool because those side conversations, 9 times out of 10. You know, get the interest of the audience more than the actual conversation, the main conversation. So it's pretty cool. It's
right.
Pretty cool. Another thing I think they should add is like a text feature, right? So you could have like a live text stream during the event. I think that'd be pretty neat. Let's see.
Yeah, and if we don't get anything either, you know, totally cool too. So all good by me.
Yeah, no worries. I do have one quick question. I mean,
yeah, let's do it.
Enzyme the other day, they just published a pretty interesting article discussing what's stopping DeFi from gaining mass adoption, right? And I'm curious to pick your brain on that. What do you think? What's really stopping DeFi from, I guess, penetrating into the mainstream, so to speak?
Yeah. For one, you know, I think it's a bit ironic when you offer to people that they can go earn, you know, 25%, 20%, 15%, not even talking about the crazy degen, you know, 250%, whatever yield that exists in DeFi today. Like they're pretty skeptical right away. It's like, ah, it sounds like you're selling me like some Nigerian prince scheme or something like that, and not interested in touching it. So I think, like, again, just that's just like one little side thing. I don't necessarily think that's the main reason why it's challenging. I mean, I don't know the exact reason why, you know, DeFi hasn't taken off yet in the same way. I would say we just need to be patient. Like, I think we are seeing a lot of signs of DeFi, like, you know, gaining mass adoption. It's just that, like, these things happen on, you know, on like an exponential scale. And like, it seems like nothing's happening at the beginning of those exponential scales until all of a sudden it's like everyone in the world is using DeFi. And so like, really, I think we just need to, you know, be patient with it. There's a lot of like really cool applications out there. I call them these DeFi mullet applications. I think that's really where most of these folks are going to get exposure to DeFi, where it's like, it looks like a, you know, a regular banking app or a traditional like app they're used to seeing, or, you know, traditional UI, but on the back end, you know, those like companies, protocols, whatever, are like utilizing DeFi. Some of these examples are like, you know, Donut and Outlet and Seashell and, Eco is kind of working in this space and stuff as well, but basically functions like a high yield savings account. People deposit money, and on the back end, you know, those companies are generating yield for those, you know, for the savings deposits in DeFi. That seems like a really great way to get exposure for like the average retail person. And then as it relates to like institutions and whatnot, I mean, I'm talking to financial advisors and family offices literally every day. And like the biggest thing that is preventing them really, or I would say that one of the two biggest things, one being regulation. It's like, you know, it's really hard for me to tell my clients to go invest money in Notional when I don't know like how to audit Notional. I don't know how the SEC is going to want me to look at Notional and like all those kinds of things and the challenges therein. And then also, you know, that's like really the biggest one, overall probably is regulation. Again, the second one is just like timing. Like these family offices, these financial advisors, like they are paying attention to crypto. They generally actually do want to get involved. It's just so like, it just got put on their radar 6 months ago or 9 months ago or a year ago. And like, they're just not going to jump in size yet. They are starting to dabble. They, you know, it just takes time. First they buy Bitcoin and Ether, then they, you know, maybe take ownership of those keys and start like doing a little, like poking around and with some other tokens and maybe doing a little bit of DeFi stuff. And then they come on to something like, you know, Notional or Urine or Compound or Aave or whatever. And so like, really it's just, you know, we're just at the very beginning of this like long sales cycle basically. I haven't read the enzyme financing. I actually haven't pulled up. I should read it. It sounds interesting. That's kind of my take on it.
Yeah, that's an interesting perspective. I mean, in the same note, I guess another good take would be the use of liquid staking, right? I mean, Lido obviously has the primitive of staking your ETH. I know Rocket Pool is doing the same now. And there's one more that's escaping me. But the biggest question is people are going to ask, what can I do with my ETH? And ETH now, it's kind of transitioning from this utility coin of sorts to an actual store of value to some extent, right? People are kind of, I don't know if you followed the Glassnode alerts, but more people are starting to accumulate and hold their ETH for the long term than they used to, kind of akin to Bitcoin, right? So that said, I'm curious to see how that will continue to grow and as we approach the merge, right? ETH 2.
Yeah, I mean, and ultimately, like, you know, depending on what happens here, global macroeconomic scale kind of stuff, like, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, I think people are generally looking for higher yields, and they're having a harder and harder time getting them, you know, in the traditional world, especially the stock market comes down and like bonds get crushed and like a bunch of different things, you know, happen with rampant inflation going across. It's like people aren't okay earning 0.5%, or, you know, it used to be like Ally Bank had 2% savings account. Like that was phenomenal. It was like, you know, you could put your money in a checking account and earn 2%. That's incredible. Like I think those days are gone, at least for a while. And so people are going to be like more actively looking for ways to to hedge against inflation, to put their assets into more productive places. And I think DeFi, you know, offers an amazing avenue for that. Obviously, a piece of that would be, you know, some of the staking things that you're talking about. I did have a question, by the way, Jeremy, that came up in my DMs from Travis. I'm happy to jump into that if, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, cool. So Travis just asked what I thought was the best way for a non-technical person looking to get an entry-level position into Web3. Yeah, so super awesome question. First and foremost, like the very, very best way to get involved in like Web3 is not the same as it would be for like a traditional company, right? Like traditional company, it's really hard. You got to apply. There's like not really a community. It's not, it's like very much like put a resume together, try to get an interview and like that kind of thing. With Web3, it's very, very different. Like the very first step is to get involved in the community. And that means, you know, following the active contributors on, oh, sorry, I got dogs barking here. Following active contributors on Twitter, joining the Discord and just like start contributing. It literally can be things like, you know, start asking like informed questions, start joining town halls and calls like this, you know, start raising your hand to be able to like, just like retweet stuff and amplify different content that the DAO or the position is pulling out and just like make yourself, you know, known in the community as someone that is, you know, well knowledgeable about the product of the DAO and like willing to help. And I think like therein will be a bunch of opportunities. There is like a no better time to be a community builder than now in you know crypto and Web3. It's like what all of these DAOs, including Notional, really need is like really strong community builders, and that looks you know like a lot of different things. There's ways to get involved around content creation. There's ways to get involved around moderation, around design, around you know education, a ton of different things. And so that's kind of my advice. Like pick a handful of different like DAOs, protocols, whatever that you think are really cool and want to, you know, to get involved in and like start really just like diving deep in them, not expecting necessarily compensation or you know, a bunch of like feedback right away from them and just like get involved in those communities and you're going to be surprised. It's literally how I got my job at Notional. I joined the Notional Discord. I'm like, hey, this protocol is kick ass. I really want to be involved in it. You know, 20 minutes later, I was on a call with Teddy, the CEO, and yeah, and then the rest is history. So, yeah, that's my advice there.
Yeah, I'm going to have to echo that. I mean, the best way to do it nowadays is we're so early, not only in just DeFi, but also the concept of just DAOs, right? So, yeah, just actively keep asking questions. Go join the community. Get active, you know, I mean, there's nothing that a community loves more or that a team loves more than to see somebody that is actively contributing to the community, right? I mean, and at the end of the day, that'll only benefit you, right? Because you build that reputation. Now it's basically you're showing up to a party and you're showing face and people recognize you for continuously showing face. I mean, it's only a matter of time before somebody approaches you and says, oh, wow, I mean, Jeremy or Travis or Cameron, you've been around here for quite some time, and now they're picking your brain, trying to get your opinion on certain topics. You know, so that's it. Yeah, I mean,
yeah,
Cameron totally. hit right in the head.
What one thing I was going to say here is like we literally like want a cool role we just rolled out at Notional is like a monthly meme lord. So like this is a paid position. You know, the requirements are like you need to deliver some high quality memes throughout the month to our community. We're going to amplify them. They need to be about the Notional product and show our value prop. But like the rest is up to you. Like that's definitely a non-technical way to get involved. And like, you know, if you're the monthly meme lord, like you bet your ass, you're going to be the first person I ask for like the next bounty that's around community building and stuff like that. If you do a good job and stuff. So I think there's a lot of opportunities out there like that. And yeah, it just really requires you plugging into the community to uncover them.
That's actually pretty badass. I'm not going to lie. A monthly meme lord. And yeah, in fact, I think I saw a similar position a few months back. Gitcoin did a similar like meme position that you that's all you do. You just create
dang memes
all day, every day.
That's great.
It's so awesome. But I mean, that even further alludes to the point, to the fact of like you get to do what you get to specialize and do what you love doing, right? I mean, like, you don't have to, I guess, acclimate to a traditional working environment, right? I mean, you make of it what you want, especially with these DAOs, right? So I totally I think that in itself is just sick. I mean, it's incredible. With that said, I mean, Travis, awesome question. And I'll also encourage the rest of the audience to ask questions as well. It just makes the conversation more interesting, to be honest with you. but with that said, I want to ask a totally different question. And I think this is where DeFi space is transitioning to at the moment, is the use of identifiers, right? One we saw with ENS with .eth. Now we're starting to see ZK rollups coming into the conversation more frequently, right? Especially with I read an article the other day about ZK identity on Ethereum, and I think that just floored me. I think that is a fascinating topic, and I'm curious to hear what you think.
Yeah, I mean, identity is one of those areas of crypto I'm pretty surprised has not taken off or like, you know, been as popular as I think it is. And I mean, decentralized identity has been talked about for a long, long time. I think it's at the core of like, and it's definitely like, just like fixed rates are, you know, kind of one of the steps to like really mature the crypto space. I think having the identity challenge figured out is another big thing that needs to be done before, you know, like the crypto space really matures. From a technical implementation standpoint, I don't know the right, place, chain, model, whatever that's going to achieve that. I know that identity can look different in a lot of ways. And there's a lot of, for a long time, it's been talked about of like the importance of it. Yeah, I don't know that they have much more to say about that. I know when I was at Dish Network, it was like one of those use cases that like we were super interested in there. How do you do distributed identity and like looking into a lot of those different problems? And I know a lot of players are looking at this. And there's the yeah. I don't know. I'm happy to like go into anything more there specifically, but.
Yeah, no, I just think it's rather interesting, especially now with ZK snarks becoming more and more prevalent in the, how do I say, the mainstream crypto Twitter conversation. I just think it's fairly interesting, right?
There's probably like there's some identity things that probably could just exist out in the open in a fully transparent way, but I would say the majority of identity use cases are going to require some type of privacy layer like ZK snarks, whether that's on Starkware or ZK Sync or with Zcash or, name your identity protocol or model. But
I think one mechanism that will hit it on the head is I like this new tool or at least this new concept of sign in with Ethereum. Right.
Yeah.
I think that will definitely at least challenge the sign in with Google or sign in with Apple mechanism. I mean, to me, it's just a no brainer. I'd much rather sign in with my ENS domain or with my Ethereum address than my Gmail, even though, Gmail is widely known as the most used identifier on the internet, right? I mean, almost everybody has a Gmail, if not multiple Gmails, right?
I think like I'm gonna push back a little bit there, and like where I'm going with this is like,
sure,
I actually don't like that in a lot of senses or in a lot of ways, and it's mostly around like, if I'm signing up for a new service, I don't want them to know that I own X, Y, and Z NFT, that I've done these trades, those trades, that I have this ENS domain, like all that kind of stuff. And so again, this identity, challenge becomes a difficult one to solve because, everything's public right now. And so again, you need something like this privacy layer, in order to do it. Those things are coming. I think probably the sign in with Ethereum thing is there's probably some way to do that in like a more private fashion where you can authenticate yourself, but not have to like give over your previous, on-chain records and stuff like that. That being said, in some cases you do want to reveal all that information, right? It's beneficial to know that you've been trading with that wallet for 5 years and that, you know, those things, but just another angle to consider.
Yeah, for sure. And I was suggesting the signing with Ethereum with, of course, the ZK rollup capability.
Right.
So
is that where that's at? I'm not like super, super familiar with like where they're at with the development and stuff. Is that kind of how they're developing the signing with Ethereum thing, or is something that's on the roadmap at least?
No, at least not from what I've seen. I think something very the concept of having it rolled up in a zero knowledge proof is something that will definitely benefit the community, but I don't think that's where they're at developmentally. You know what I mean? I think we have about 2 minutes left, so I think it's a good time to start winding down the room. Again, I'm going to extend the invitation to the audience. If you have any final questions, please feel free to request to hop on stage or ping me or Cameron if you have any questions. With that said, let's start winding things down. Cameron, if you have any closing thoughts or statements, please feel free to let the audience know.
Yeah, awesome. Only thing I'll say is, again, I mean, if you want to get involved in what we're doing at Notional, we'd love to have more, you know, designers, community builders, developers, whatever. We have a whole list of active bounties that we have. If you have an idea of a way you'd like to get involved that is not on the bounty sheet, please reach out to me or apply for a grant. We're looking to give money away basically for people that want to do good work on Notional. So that's my little plug there. And, with that, yeah, it's been kick ass. Always been a big lover of Ben and happy to get engaged again here, with you guys again. So.
Awesome. I really appreciate that. And to let everyone know in the audience, we host these Twitter spaces bi-weekly. So the next one, let me see, I'm not good with my dates, so I'm going to have to pull up my calendar here. But hold on. We are looking at today's the 3rd. The next Twitter space would be on the 18th. And we usually send out the thread about a day ahead just to get everybody informed of what particular topic we'll be discussing on Friday. So if you're interested, please give the Ben Twitter a follow. Give me a follow. Give the Ben team a quick follow if you want to stay updated on what we're doing. I also want to give a quick shout out to the Ben Learn portal. We're actively posting courses and getting individuals that are interested in expanding our catalog or our library on the Ben Learn. Our goal here is to continue to educate everybody and anybody that wants to be involved in crypto or DeFi or anything of the sort. So go ahead, go to learn.blockchainedu.org and check it out. That said, we're at 4:00. We've hit the hour. Cameron, I can't express how happy I am to have you on the event. Everybody that joined, thank you for joining. Have a good one.
Yeah, cheers, guys. Adios.
This was another episode of Ben.
Blockchain Education Network.
Make sure to subscribe so you don't miss out on any future episodes. Also, keep up with us on Twitter and Instagram @blockchainedu. And visit our YouTube channel for more valuable blockchain content.